All right, today, perhaps one of the most profound aspects or pieces of your spiritual journey. Sometimes we seem to save the best for last. We've gone through power, we've talked about visualizing, creating, manifesting. But ultimately, it always comes back to self. Can you, who you are, create the reality that you love and that you enjoy? Can you be who you came to be? Right? And this is crucial, because if you don't know who you are and you don't claim who you are, then it's very, very tricky for you to be able to put together a life that is truly reflective of you. It's difficult for you to have the levels of success, of mastery, and of freedom that as a spiritual light being you came to experience. You're the one that's so important. So what we'd like to start with is, who are you? You know, if we ask you that question, how would you answer? Now, of course, you know, if we're here at a focus on a spiritual topic, that you know that we're asking, who are you, from a spiritual perspective. But if you go and talk to someone on the street, who are you? They're basically going to say, well, my name is such and such, and I live in such a town, and my family is this, and this is what I do for a living, and I have these children, and, you know, that kind of thing. And that is generally what people respond, who are you? They are able to say who they are only by the reference points that they have outside of them in their environment and the name that is called them. Right? So you know that who you are as a light being, as a spiritual being, is that you're a spark of consciousness. You're a piece of the divine. You're one of the sparks of light in the body of God, Goddess, all that is. And your mission, your job, as you undertook it, this particular mission of incarnation and manifestation, was for you to learn how to be the greatest and most magnificent spark that you are. Now, what does that mean? That means that your focus is to claim and know who you are. The ancients, the mystery schools, based around man, know thyself. Know who you are. Because when you know who you are, you can then claim the powers, the gifts, the strengths of the divine that you carry. If you don't know who you are, you don't know it's yours. You simply will not be able to see it. So yes, you start that way. But in order to become a physical being, you had to forget who you were. The choice was for you to come and to learn how to create from scratch, to enter the darkness, so to speak, to enter the unknown, to enter the chaos of physical plane manifestation. And so you and a bunch of others, your higher self, the divine in you, your soul, and also parts of yourself that you pull together to work with you on a physical lifetime, plus spirit helpers, beings who love you on the other side, you all got together in a council and set up and created and put together this fantastic illusion called physical plane reality. And you came here to learn how to function in a very limited dimensionality, with the idea that because you didn't know who you were, that you would be able to discover yourself in unique ways, and in the process, create from scratch, create from a place of not knowing. Now, everywhere else, those who know who they are, which is most every other planet and every other star system, didn't do this experiment. So they go to school for manifesting and creating. And they don't do physical plane manifesting and creating. They just learn, you know, because they already know that they're divine. They just learn how to work it. But you said, you know, I want to be more creative about that. You wanted to come to a planet that is extraordinarily abundant in creativity. This planet has probably more species of life on it than almost any other planet around. There's some planets where there's only like 5 or 6 species of animals. You know, but no, you wanted a total plethora. You wanted a whole kaleidoscope of life. Every kind of form that could possibly be imagined. Why? Because this is a place of creativity. And you have to be in a place of abundant creative energy in order for you to really develop that which you have chosen to develop. Your own creative capacity to create realities yourself. So here you are. You came into physical plane reality. You were forced, in a sense, by doing it, and it was actually your choice, to forget who you were. And as such, your knowledge of yourself became very, very limited, very, very small. The very first idea of who you were was given to you by your parents, probably your mother. You see, and if your parents started out saying, you know, bad girl or good girl, that gave you a sense of self. Oh, you know, girl. Or if it was boy, boy. You know, you got a sense. Okay, I'm this particular gender. I'm good or I'm bad. Or I distress people or I make people happy. Something to do with me. You see, and so you began, your curiosity helped you, your engagement with this intriguing reality that seemed to be so unknown. You learn to gestalt things, you learn how to put ideas together, you learn how to take information and take it inside yourself. Now, the only problem about that was that the assessments of who you were came to you from outside you. So you were also too small, perhaps too unclear about who you were, to know whether these assessments were true or not. We would say for the most part they were not. They came through a filter of distortion from your parents, from your family, from friends, from teachers, as you grew up, as for anyone that you came into association with, in a way reflected you. Part of the illusion of this reality is everyone is reflecting some aspect of you back to you, telling you something about yourself. And so you picked up a lot of mixed up, erroneous, conflicting, limiting information. Yeah, you picked up some good stuff too along the way. But you also didn't know how to sort out the good stuff from the bad stuff. And when you got old enough, what you learned to do was to internalize that assessor, the one who assessed you, the one who judged you, the one who evaluated your performance, evaluated your thoughts and feelings as to whether they were appropriate or not, the one who assessed and judged you according to some kind of standards, some kind of rules, some kind of logic. So, in a sense, you internalized all these erroneous assumptions about yourself. But you see, one of the things you needed so very, very much was a sense of continuity. You can't really create and manifest anything unless you have certain continuity. You cannot learn anything unless you have a sense of continuity. And so you gradually built your identity. your identity. Your first identity, of course, is that your gender and who your parents are and who your family is, that you belong to that and you are the first or second or third child or whatever it is. That identity, you identified with your family. As you grew older, your identity was a little bit larger. I go to this school or I live in this neighborhood. And these people are neighbors. So I am one of this neighborhood. I'm one of this community. As you got into adolescence, you learned how to work with your social group. And they reflected back to you, you're socially incompetent or you're cool. And, you know, and everybody wants to, you know, be with you and look at what you're doing. And so it depends it depended on your outside circumstances that you set up, in a sense, before you came, to give you certain feedback so that you could unfold those themes that you wish to unfold in this lifetime. But initially, your self identity was that of whatever came to you from outside. And then, as you got older, you would take that external reflection, that external message, erroneous still, perhaps, and internalize it for yourself. You know, I am this shy person. I don't dance well, you know. I tend to be a bit ditzy. Or, I don't do math. You know, those kinds of things. You have the capacity to be everything, to be all. But by those identifications, your identity, to make it consistent for you, you installed a sense of your personal history, which explained who you were. Now that personal history is filled with all sorts of stuff, all sorts of conflicting pieces and so on. But you use that personal history to give yourself a sense of continuity so that you can learn stuff, so that you can have an orientation to stuff, so you could place it wherever you needed to place it. So where you could figure out, you know, how to relate to your peers, where you could learn the rules for, you know, playing basketball or whatever, all of this got put into your identity. The evaluations and the assessments, the judgments you made of yourself required that you split yourself into two parts, a kind of a you that's being shaped and formed, and a you that is kind of the authority that's making the assessments. All right? When you did that split, that created for you a self-image. All right? Self-image is the you assessing you. The original you that's being assessed very often remains a child, just energetically remains a child, because that assessor very often takes an authoritative role and says, you're like this and you're like that and you're consistently like this and you're consistently like that. And so you buy into certain patterns, certain repetitive behaviors, certain repetitive thoughts, feelings, actions, and so on, that reinforce this continuity. A lot of facets of yourself in this continuity. Your identity is actually lots of different pieces. It has to do with what you think and how you feel and how you process and how you decide on things and how you determine your life and how you respond to the environment and how you react and all those kinds of things. All of those are facets of you. Then you have your personality, which is assessed by that inner one who says, okay, here's who you've got to be. Here's the self-image you're supposed to have with other people. And so you learn how to put on a self-image, a mask, so to speak. There's a way that you see yourself, and then there's a way that you you portray your identity as your image that you project out there, hoping that other people will read you in a particular way, very positively, of course, and tell you good things about yourself or reflect really positive things back to you. As anyone, from childhood on up, you want to avoid pain and suffering and have more happiness and more joy. So, of course, you want that assessment to be really good. The problem always lies, though, in that the assessment is really done inside yourself. It's not done by any external agent. And your identity, which you think is fixed, actually becomes a trap for you, a prison for you, of many patterns that your subconscious mind, the part of you that likes repetitive consistency, that you have called in as a facet of yourself to work with you to create this continuity, holds in place. These patterns that you think are unchangeable, these beliefs that you hold about yourself, you think are written in stone. But that's how you have maintained the continuity, so that you could learn. So there could be a you who could learn something and bring that back and integrate that in your life and grow. And no more. Your curiosity continues unabated in your life. You can't help yourself. It's part of your nature as a divine being. It just kind of comes with the territory. You are a creator. You're curious. You want to know more. You want to grow. You want to expand who you are. That's just natural. But you were given tools to do this that were so distorted and so twisted that a lot of your assessments, and some of you, even to this day, your assessments tend to be more negative than positive. Now, why did you do that? Well, you wanted to fix your self-image so that you would get that approval. You would get that love. You would get valued. All right, so to fix your self-image, you had to perform. Your mask had to be right. Now, you didn't think that it was really about you. You thought it was about who you appeared to be, because that's what your culture tends to emphasize, is image. Your culture tends to emphasize image over substance pretty much all the time. Why? Because what goes on in substance? What goes on in the real stuff underneath there, underneath the mask? Well, there's old judgments, there's old pain, there's emotions that are deep and wounds that have happened. And who wants to feel those over and over again? So a lot of avoidance in your culture prompted you to set up your own system of improving yourself, so that your external image would meet with approval. That way you thought that you were going to get past the pain. And you thought, I'll grow too. That'll be great. I will grow. I'll be more. I'll be more brilliant. I'll be more capable. I'll be more powerful. I'll be more wonderful. But you see, your self-image tended and still tends to be a way of bouncing that energy, that reference, that mirrored image from other people in your environment to you to hone the mask. And so as such, your self-image generally does not get bigger and larger than the reality you're in. It tends to stay within whatever box that you are in by habit and try to function better within the box. Well, unfortunately, that doesn't help you do your mission. It doesn't help you fulfill your destiny as a light being. It's one of those things you have to learn to bust, to break. Because, you see, you've been trained to think that identity is rock solid. And if you don't deliberately work at it, consciously, actively, you can slide back into what is called instinct or instinctual response or habitual energies, habitual experiences. In other words, you will just go back to your patterns, repeat the patterns over and over again. And many of you have had the experience where you've broken your patterns, where you've stepped out of the box and went into this whole new level of yourself, celebrating, feeling grander, feeling light and free, and wham, the old pattern came back. Oh, there it is again. I thought I was free of it. Well, what happens there is that your self-image stayed in the box. You may have dreamed yourself out of the box. You may have released the patterns and stepped free. But when it comes time for assessment, the assessment is still there in the box. The self-image is still there with the old reality level. And so that's what happens when you get those snapbacks. You don't have to. It's really not part of your mission. Is to continuously do two steps forward, one step back, two step forwards, one back, step back, sometimes one step forward and seemingly two steps back. It's not really necessary to do it that way. But you got to understand two things. One is that identity is fluid and ever changing. And you can change your identity and create a different kind of continuity for yourself. And part of the way that you do it is number two, is that you need to heal the relationship between the you who is being assessed and the you who is assessing. Those two both need to expand. Your self-image needs to grow. If you can do that, you can experience more love, more success, more happiness and joy than you would have previously ever thought possible for the person that you were who was born in such and such a place to such and such parents and had to grow up under such and such restraints. In a sense, the limits of your past won't be there anymore. Because what you'll end up doing as you shift your identity is that your personal history will cease to matter. It will cease to be a determinant in your life. It will cease to be part of your identity. Your personal story, your life story can change. And you can rewrite it however you like. Oh, but I want to be true to the facts. You look at it through skewed lenses right now. Some of you have looked at your childhood from a very critical standpoint. What about all the good things? What about all the gifts, the talents, the capacities, rather than all the shutdowns, repressions, suppressions, and pain? What's more important in your identity? What do you wish to have? And also, being that it is past and there's only the present, Your personal history can be anything. You can make it up. You really can. It doesn't matter. You make it up to be in alignment with where you want to go, so that it makes it natural for you as your identity, as being who you are and the personality you are and the way you are, to succeed at whatever it is you want to succeed. If the past is in alignment with the future that you want, well, for you, the past over here and the future over here, then you, here right in the center, will be right in line. You'll be on track. There's a lot of freedom in this. Science says it's got to be factual, and factual sounds like something very dry, something very dull. The facts sound like the pain. Facts. Oh, the facts. You were wounded. So that fact seems to be more important than there would be afternoons you would spend with little nature spirits in the woods. Yeah, you know, you had both magic experiences and painful experiences. But the assessor says that the only way to improve the value and the feedback that you get from outside you so that you feel better about yourself and improve your self-image is to go and work with and cover up or hide from or compensate for all those wounds. So your assessor is going around looking at the wounds because that's the identity you've got to shake. That's the identity you've got to hide. You don't want people to see the impact of the wounds, the impact of the pain. Because if they do, they might perceive you as weak. They might perceive you as inadequate or insecure or sad. Oh, what a sad specimen. You don't want them to see that, unless, of course, you're into a manipulation from weakness. Some people do that. They call others to come to them. They have the image of them as the fragile, sick or wounded puppy kind of thing. And so they call somebody, here, come take care of me. But outside of that little manipulation, outside of that strategy, a childhood strategy, no doubt, you have the opportunity to change everything. Now, this is not a meditation. It's just a little experiment. You don't have to put anything down or get comfortable or anything. But just right where you are, just kind of close your eyes for a minute. Just think for a moment. Think about somebody you care for. Someone you love. Feel inside yourself. What does love feel like for you? Where's that love? How does that feel to love somebody? Just feel the love as much as you can. Amplify it. Pay attention to it. What does it feel like? Is it warm or is it flowing? Or what is the qualities of it, the subjective qualities of that love? When you think of the one that you care about, the one you love, can you see that one you love as a light being? Can you see that one you love as valuable and worthwhile to you? Can you see that one that you love as really okay, a good person? Can you see that person's beauty? Can you see that person's dark stuff too and be okay with that and still love them, even though there's stuff, stupid stuff that sometimes they do perhaps? Is there a way that you can love them even though they have that stuff? You do, don't you? You love them. Regardless of their stuff, even though sometimes it's been hard for you to be with them or hard for you to deal with it, nevertheless, the love is still there, regardless. Just acknowledge that to yourself. All right, now think about you. Can you love you? Love you. Just love you now. The same energy, the same caring, the same acceptance. Now just for you. Can you love you? How much can you allow yourself to love you without paying attention to the assessor? Without paying attention to assessor comments. Well, I love me, but... And even though I have X, Y, and Z problem, an issue, okay, I'll love myself. Or I love myself mostly. Or I love myself. I totally accept who I am. Unconditionally accept myself. Just feel that. If you can. What extent can you allow yourself to feel it as deeply, or even perhaps more deeply, than this other person that you just felt love for? Because when you love yourself, you are being the assessor. Who is the you now that you're loving? What is that you? Who is that? Who is that you you love? Is it the little child you that needs love and attention? Is it the embattled you who is valiantly trying to make it through life? What you is that that you are loving? What you are you appreciating, caring for? What you are you being, in a sense, responsible for? Let yourself now just slip into that you that's being assessed and being loved. Just sense it. Just imagine. Are you weak, strong, beautiful, twisted, and distorted, happy, sad? What is that you? What is that you that you spent your childhood and adolescence and adulthood, much of it perhaps, hiding? Or trying to improve? Or trying to grow up? Where do you stand in that process? The you that's being assessed. The essential you. That you. Who are you? Who are you? What is it that you use for your identity? Do you still identify with your family of birth? Do you identify with your community? Even the network of light workers, perhaps? Do you identify with hard-working people trying to get ahead? Do you identify with someone who is shy, perhaps a loner, perhaps needing more attention and social approval? What you is there? Just feel it. What mistakes has this you made? Any big ones? Any little ones? Anything embarrassing that the assessor must come and work with? Try to shape, try to change, try to compensate for, try to hide, try to whatever? Now go back to the assessor, you. Step back into the one who is doing the loving. The positive assessor that we sneaked you into being. And look at that you that you are assessing. How valuable, how worthy, what a beautiful light you are. Does that feel comfortable to you? Does that ring true to you? Let the loving assessor you now go to the you being assessed, the essential identity of you, and hold that you, and that you that is the essential identity you being assessed holds the assessor, the loving assessor. Forgive yourself. Love yourself. Let crap go. Just let it go. That's it. Just let all the judgments go. Yes, there still is a judger, assessor. But right now, you're not there. Right now, you're just with you. The two of you in you. How does it feel to love yourself? To care about you? All right, so let yourself bring that feeling back with you. Open your eyes. Now, we'll take care of the assessor in a little bit. It's got to be healed. That's the healing. But you see, there's a lot of awareness that's in there, that's just available when you do this type of technique. When you open up to your inner recesses of yourself, the truth is there. The true identity can shine through, despite the personal history. Despite the sense of identity as being a person who is like this and like that and has this limit and does that well, and all those lists of assessments, the you that you just experienced, the two yous together, had a lot of light. A lot of beauty reflected your essence as divine. Now, one of the things we would suggest is that you can do this on a day-to-day basis to uncover the truths that hide within you. Now, you notice that we talked about forgiveness in there. The one who loves you, the assessor you, is very happy to forgive any stupidities you have done, any inadequacies that you have displayed, any mistakes in your self-image. It will forgive this part of you. But the critical assessor you will not. It's one of the ways you can tell, where are you? Which one are you being? Because you can have three pieces there of you. The assessor you, the authority, the one who seems to be, okay, this is what's got to be done and this is the way to do it. Here's what's got to be hidden. Here's what's got to be projected. Here's how we snow them. Here's how we impress them. That we're spiritual. Yes. We'll play the role. We'll have the facade working just so. If the facade works, then everything else should come along. Now, how has that worked for you? It may have enabled you to avoid a certain amount of ridicule, let's say, in childhood or adolescence or even in your adulthood. That was a major point of it, was to avoid that ridicule so that you wouldn't have to feel the desperation, the pain, the shame, the failure of yourself. But underneath it all, there is some part of your identity that still believes that you're not okay, that something's still wrong with you and there's something still that has to be fixed. Otherwise, you wouldn't get the critical assessor you to keep working and give them a good full-time job. Otherwise, you would find that your self-image could expand to include such magical realities, such amazing amounts of beauty and wonder and fabulous lifestyle, that you would be absolutely gloriously free and celebratory all the time. No snapbacks. No setbacks. Maybe times that you would pause and think and feel through what has happened to evaluate it. And yes, to bring it into you. The experience into you. But who's going to do that assessment? Who's going to do that evaluation? To heal your relationship with yourself, you need to make sure that the assessor is a loving one. You need to make sure that the loving assessor and the one being assessed are both loving, both powerful, both responsible for creation, for creating a reality. In a sense, you want to grow up the you that's being assessed and change the critical assessor you into a loving equal, a loving friend who just gives you feedback that you're lovable, that you're worthwhile, and will take the mirrored feedback, the mirrored information from your reality, because everything coming to you is information. And translate that in a way that's useful for you as a light being to proceed. Not useful for you as a wounded one to cope with. Or not continuing to take that mirroring feedback of the patterns and continuously translate that feedback the same old way that you have for years and years and years. Because it's the translation of what you experience out there in your reality that's mirroring back to you what's going on and who you are and how you're going about stuff. All of that mirroring, which is reflecting, doesn't have to be translated into judgment. It doesn't have to be a critiquing. You don't have to learn through pain. You don't have to take it personally. And that's part of the judgmental assessor, is that everything coming to you takes it personally, that assessor. All right. You know, they looked at you funny. That's probably because you are funny. All right. That's probably because you're acting up, or that's because you're being too assertive, or that's because you're being too this or too that, or you showed them the wrong aspect of yourself, or you'd better this and that and the other so that they won't look funny at you anymore. They won't dislike you. They won't judge you anymore. Tiptoe carefully around them. Don't let them get angry. Avoid them at all costs. The critical assessor you maintains the habits and the patterns of response that you have ingrained in you as your identity. The beliefs you have about yourself, your capacity, ingrained into your identity. You have sometimes a glimpse of what you're capable of, and it's awesome, is it not? Isn't it wonderful? When you go, oh wow, look at what I could really do. If, right? If. And there would be the condition, you know? If I got my act together. If I could love myself. If I could value myself. If I had confidence. If I knew more about that. If I. Now, if you can use the feedback and you can go to that if, and the if does not imply that you're too stupid to learn, right? Or, hey, this is just not my cup of tea, it's too hard, and I'm going to make a fool of myself. You can use it as positive feedback for yourself. And say, my reality is mirroring me this stuff where people are looking at me funny, right? How am I going to feel about that? What's that telling me about me when they look at me disapprovingly? Like I'm some kind of weird, strange creature. What am I going to do about that information? Well, what did you used to do about it? Made you uncomfortable, didn't it? So what are you going to do about it now? If you identify as the light being that you are, and if your assessor is loving, not the authority, but just an assessor working for you and working with you, part of you. Part of you that can process and evaluate things without putting them through the judgment filter. You're gonna look at it and say, they're probably, you know, responding to my being a bit outrageous, or me being speaking my truth, or me being the way I am. And then you can laugh and say, well, they just probably have no clue. You won't take it personally. You won't tiptoe. But you might be more aware that these people are very judgmental right now of you, of something, some aspect of you. And so maybe in your interactions with them, if you have to have those, you may need to be more loving for yourself, and you may need to be clearer of a tendency to judge others. Because what if that mirror of people judging you is just telling you, hey, you know, there's still a piece of you that still judges. It judges you, and it judges other people. Now, as a spiritual being on a spiritual path, we would betcha that there has been a time where you have judged people who are not on a spiritual path as being brain dead, as being asleep, unconscious. That's just the unconscious people. They're just not aware. They're not awake. They're not alert. Not like me. Now, What kind of response do you think your universe is going to send you, your reality is going to feed back to you? Of course, it's going to feed back those judgments. So if you get judgments from someone else, you do want to take it as a message to clear any judgments about yourself first, and any judgments you might have about others. Now, the instinct of the critical assessor you is to judge right back, to rationalize your facade, your mask, to explain why you are the way you are and why that's okay. Or some other strategy intended to keep you from going into painful places. But you see, dear one, you're not going to really be healed and feel really good about yourself until you can accept your darkness. It's there. This doesn't mean you're bad. It means that you came and explored everything. This is a free will universe, and part of what you wanted to come is to come and experience the light, the dark. Why is it the good, bad, and the ugly? You know, you wanted to experience it all. How are you going to create a new, interesting, different reality if you just didn't look up under every rock and discover what's there? Now, we admit that you human beings have kind of overdone it a little bit in the dark category. But some of that is because you wanted to give yourself that mirror of the darkness to give yourself the opportunity to accept it inside you. There are parts of you. There are parts of you that are in the darkness. Can you accept these parts and be okay with these parts? And love these parts. And let their impact on you go. Or let their impact on you offer you the opportunity to expand your self-image. It is well known in old shamanic circles and even currently in places on the planet where there are the real authentic shamanic people. The shamans know that they're both light and dark. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to do light magic and do healing over here and then they're going to send, you know, death darts over there. Generally, they choose their direction, their path. But they know that there's a dark part of them. And they know that this dark part of them, if they let it have power and influence and dominate their self, they will fall prey to a sense of the inner trickster, the inner saboteur. So a lot of what shamans have to do is to keep dismantling reality structures. That's why you never can pin them down. Oh yeah, there's some that have been really nicely trained to be very acceptable to the Western mind, very orderly, very logic. Oh, we're just, you know, beings of light, blah, blah, blah. But if you get to the really authentic, nitty-gritty, you know, fingers-in-the-dirt type of a shaman, you're going to find that they know how to go into the underworld. They know how to work with darkness. They know how to work with demons. They know how to work with angels. They got to know the whole gamut. They have a person who comes to them who's ill because of a curse. They've got to go deal with it. They've got to go and face whoever put the curse on to release it. Now, they look at it that way. You may say, oh, it's not like that. There really isn't much like that. It's just, oh, negativity that's been bought into, blah, 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 blah. And you can explain it all away with Western logic. But it doesn't help you deal with your darkness. You've just explained away the darkness, but it's still a scary place in there. And until you're at peace with it, the self-image of you, the one being assessed, the one who is the essence, the whole, the identity of you, will never feel safe. How can you expand your success and your image? How can you take adventures on this planet with all its wildness, all its so many stories of tragedy, so much danger and so much promise and opportunity all at the same time. How can you deal with that if you can't know your darkness? You've spent time as a spiritual being on your spiritual path learning about your light, and sometimes that's been harder to do than you thought. But in your identity, there is a judgment on you about your darkness, and all the judgments about darkness need to be lifted. All the judgments. It's still going to be dark. There's still going to be times where you don't have positive intentions. Or your intentions may be not clear, confused, creating confusion realities, conflicts, and so on. How are you going to straighten it all out if you can't understand your own darkness and be okay with it? And then laugh and tear apart all the reality constructs you've made to protect yourself against the so-called darkness so that you can embrace your power and know that you are creating it all. It's because if you love yourself so that you know that you love yourself, and you love yourself unconditionally, and even the dark you as well as the light you, you know that any time a darkness shows up, you can make a choice. You don't have to fall prey to it. You can create any reality you wish. But so many of you, because you still have this darkness that you're still afraid of, you're afraid that whatever reality you create is going to have some kind of kick in it. It's going to have some kind of undermining aspect to it. There's going to be something that's going to fall apart there. In the past, it did. And this may be part of your pattern, that you create realities that fall apart because something dark comes in, some darkness, some negative person or negative circumstance. Like the person who always, just as they get ahead, they have an accident. Or they get sick. Or just as they are having a great time, you know, something tragic happens to someone they know, or in their family is a crisis that they have to drop everything and attend to, or something. And these are all messages from your darkness. Time to heal. And time to heal you. Now, who's in the darkness? You know, we have a list here. We always have these lists. In your darkness, the most primary, most impactful member of your dark team, right? Is your critical assessor. And this is the one you believe most of the time. The critical assessor is the one who is there to confirm the worst limitations of your identity to you. And then tell you how you can cope with it within the confines of the box, which is the current rules for manipulation of realities, the current rules for how much you can do, how much activities, what your boundaries are. It's an internalized parent figure originally. You internalized your parents, created what is called the conscience. There's a good part to it. There's a dark part to your conscience. But that is what initially created your split. Your conscience. Most children get it somewhere, anywhere between, you know, 7 and 10. Somewhere in there is your conscience. That's where you do the split, and you have the internalized parent judging the child you, the identity you. The essential you. That's the conscience. Some of you may have to go back to that conscience and take that parent out of there Take that authority out of there and take your own authority back. Take your power back from the internal parent. Now, the internal parent can get even heavier, especially as you get into adulthood and you're trying to succeed and you're trying to achieve and all those kinds of things, and can install in you a very enhanced, even grander version of the negative assessor. But it's actually a different aspect. We call it the slave driver. The slave driver's task is to whip you into achievement so that at some point your inner critical parent assessor will give you the green light of approval. You've done it. Okay, you've made it. Does a critical parent assessor know how to determine that? No. It's based on what you were feeling and experiencing somewhere between the ages of 7 and 10. So you're never going to get approval from that one, ever. The slave driver will continue, and it can run you into the ground. Why do you think there's so many high-profile, high-performance people who fall by heart attacks, cancer, you know, diseases? They have such crazy things going on in their personal lives, car accidents, drama, up and down the line. Slave driver will not let you rest. It's relentless on you. You're not good enough. You keep got to do more. You got to do more. You got to do more. You got to do more. The slave driver is generally installed somewhere in your mid-20s, generally. But some people get it as early as like 13 or 14. Another aspect of your darkness, and we mentioned it before, we just want to say it as part of the list, is the negative intentions that you've had. The negative intentions you've held for other people, if you've had any desires for revenge, if you've had any jealousy of others, if you have envy of others, a resentment of others, resentment of their power, their influence, their beauty, their blah, 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 that you don't think you have. All of that that you've done goes under the negative or darker intentions. Accept that. It's just been there. It's part of what you had to explore. You had to look at it. You had to go through it. And if you do one in the future, don't kick yourself about it. Don't rear up the critical assessor to give you a hard time about it. Laugh. Oh, there's one of those. There's part of the darkness there. What's that tell me? This tells me that somewhere I don't feel powerful. Somewhere I don't feel capable or strong. Some assessment I have made in the past. Some identity I have here. Identify with a weak person or an inadequate person or a poor person or something. If you use it as feedback like that with no judgment, then it doesn't restrain you, right? Unprocessed emotions that become toxic. These are your, these can be pretty dark. These can get you twisted. This can help get you held down and hold you into those boxes very, very easily. If you have rage, you're always going to feel powerless. If you're angry, you're always going to have some frustration going on. If you have a lot of fear that you haven't really dealt with, you're going to have anxiety. You're going to feel out of control. You're going to try and control. You're going to try and manipulate things, dominate things as a reaction to it. And then, of course, then you can criticize yourself for manipulating and controlling if you're not hiding it from yourself. And two more of them. Another one is the martyr, victim or martyr. And we talked about the victim a little bit. If you have rage, you feel powerless. But if you're the martyr, you're the noble one who nobody really, really appreciates and understands enough. So much judgment in this, so much judgments of others, so much entitlement. Okay, I'm going to be so nice to this person that'll guilt them into being nice back to me. And when they're not nice back to you, hands on hips, you'll be furious. You mean I did all that service for nothing? I gave them this and that and I helped them. I was nice for them. And look what they do, the ungrateful people. Gosh, they just don't understand. I should be treated better than this. The ego princess. Right, and the ego, and as part of this, generally the ego and the martyr have a little dance together. Now, we did a whole workshop on the ego. But the ego works closely with subconscious to maintain the identity as a limited one. And it will also identify with your trickster to pull the rug out from under you at the last moment, just when you're reaching for the golden carrot. And another piece of your darkness. It's a response to the toxic emotions. It's your fantasy. It's a fantasy of how things are, or how things work, how the world is. It's a fantasy. It's like a scum on top of a pond. It absolutely inhibits the true clarity and beauty of what's underneath. The fantasy creates a blah reality. It takes everything, all the dimensions and depth and richness of life, and puts them to one dimension. It's like this cartoon in where all the people are, you know, cartoons, and their town is a cartoon, so they're all, and they all know that they're in 2D. They talk with each other and they do this and that and the other in 2D, and you have to see that they go down the street, they have to walk around everything on the paper, you know. It's just such a reduced existence. That's your darkness. You need to be at peace with your darkness. And you also need to know and be at peace with your true temperament. Now, we've talked about this before, here and there. We're going to bring it up again. When you came into physical plane manifestation, you worked with the elements. You worked with the forces of nature. You worked with the powers as part of the creation tools. And you are, within yourself, reflects all of the forces of nature yourself. You are part of nature. The four elements, or four forces, are generally known through their astrological origin as fire, earth, air, and water. Now, if you look at your astrological horoscope and you look at what your sun sign is, what your moon sign is, and your rising sign is, you can have a really good picture of your temperament just from a reflection, that which is what the astrology chart is about. It's all just a reflection of you. Reflection of your patterns of identity. It's why astrology, psychological astrology, can be so helpful to people to really awaken them to, oh, there's how my darkness shows up, and here's the talent, some talents and gifts of my lightness. But it can also, maybe the main thing is to give you, in a way, a picture of your temperament. Now, fire, ardent, enthusiastic. fire signs are Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. The fire energy is very dynamic. You're not really, a fire energy doesn't want to sympathize and comfort other people, but rather will inspire them, perhaps energize them. Doesn't want to stop long enough to do that. But they can burn out. A fire energy is motivated by freedom, motivated to experience things firsthand. Earth energy tends to be practical. It likes things. It likes to collect things, likes to have things, and likes to be present with things. An earth person likes to be with their relationship. Long distance relationships don't tend to work. Earth likes to be there, likes to be present, likes to be close. Very sensual. Earth is sensual. They're loyal. Earth can be extremely loyal to family and really want a solid, secure, stable family life. Earth likes that. Earth can also be a workaholic, can overdo a bit, but they've got more stamina than the fire. Earth is motivated by bonds of relationship, and they're also motivated to be caring leaders. Earth likes to hold court, to be present. They understand, they can understand dignity. They can be more grounded. We say they can be because of Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn. Sometimes Virgo isn't very well grounded, despite being an Earth. But it's probably the most sensual of the Earths. Air. The signs of Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius. Air has a tendency to be detached, tend to be thinkers, like abstract concepts and ideas, abstract design. They like, they don't like to particularly deal with emotions, like they like analysis better. Air is changeable. Now, again, air doesn't really like to comfort others, but air will share information and teach. Air likes to talk or get across ideas. They like the communication thing. They like to see people learn. They are very interested in learning. They can be inconsistent in their behaviors and their mannerisms, but they are consistent in the sense that they always like to look at the interactions of things, how energy communes. They're always connected somehow to an in-group, or they're always a trendsetter connection of some sort there. And they're motivated by curiosity and desire to know. Water. Intuitive, receptive. Water is nurturing and deep. Now, here's the sign that can just be the healer, can go and hold somebody, put energy into them deeply, because water's deep. Water people, though, can also be very moody, can be very emotional, because down in the depth, you find an awful lot of love and an awful lot of drama and an awful lot of stuff that your culture generally doesn't like to work with. So when they say, okay, who identifies with water as their most profound element? You'll find very few people will say, yeah, I'm a water. Well, when they say, who's fire and who's air? Oh, yeah. The hands go up. Yes. Because in your culture, water seems to be difficult. But it's a very beautiful place to be, even if it's hidden or secretive, because water senses and knows down deep. Knows essence. Water knows essence. Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces. Essence. Understands the depth. Now, water can be very impressionable. And it can change mind easily. But it is highly motivated by safety, peace, and harmony. Generally, you have one of this is your major and one is your minor. But you have all four elements in you. Some of you will have certain unusual combinations, like it'll be heavily dominated by one or seemingly absent another. It's your uniqueness that determines what your major one and your minor one are. And when you can play with it and be okay with it, some of the things that we said people see as criticisms. They're not. They're just part of the way the nature flows in that element. When you accept your dark and when you accept your light, you become whole. When you accept your temperament and everything in it, and you live your life according to your temperament, there'll be a certain sense of glory and peace in your life. You'll wake up in the morning, you'll be glad to be you. You'll be glad to be living your life, because when you live in your own temperament, it's a celebration of you. It's one of the most loving acts you can do. Is to live your life according to your temperament. It is an essential part of your identity. And it's a part of your identity that you can utilize in a positive way as a continuity without limiting yourself. Knowing that you have all the elements, but that you tend to focus, and this is just your choice in this lifetime, you've come in with an essential focus on one or two. Or maybe essential absence in another. All right, so what we're going to do here is we're going to take a break. And after the break, we will work with you on, you'll have questions and answers and that kind of thing. And then we'll come back, take another quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll give you the steps to healing yourself and take you on a meditative journey to do that. So think about what you'd like to know, what you'd like to clarify, and we'll be back with you in 20 minutes. All right. Farewell for now.